hungover and thinking about breakfast. Egg, bacon, American cheese, soft, toasted, buttered roll, just a dash of hot sauce.
Not too much, Sal. Wanna taste the cheese?
What a way to start my new life. With the perfect egg sandwich.
All right, hey guys, and welcome to the Three Drinks In podcast, episode number 166. In this episode, we are talking about the movie Birds of Prey, or the I don't know what the name of the movie is. It's terrible. Before we get into the Birds of Prey movie, I want to remind you all that Three Drinks In is available on all streaming services, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and iHeartRadio. Make sure that you subscribe, tell all your friends, and leave us a review. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at @ThreeDrinksInPod. You can like us on Facebook, and you can email us at ThreeDrinksInPodcast@gmail.com. What is the name of this movie?
The Fantabulous Emancipation of One Harley Quinn.
And
what? Yeah, and what I just said.
Right. Which I think is an important fact, believe it or not. In that it doesn't say or. If it says or, like when a title has a parenthetical after it, I've always taken that to mean, and maybe you can tell me if I'm right or wrong, that this was an alternative title that the author did not go with. Is that kind of how it works? Like, this is what you could also call this?
Right.
Yeah. Like, there was a Broadway show years ago written by Tony Kushner called Caroline or Change. And I didn't... Everyone just kind of said the whole title as in one breath, and then I saw it written and went, oh, it's Caroline, or it's called Change, depending on whatever. But, like, it's not an addition to, it's an alternate.
Yeah, that's just like Dr. Strangelove.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Although they don't really do these kind with the or, because it's kind of pretentious, but this one is and.
Well, yeah, and I think that actually... that answers some questions. Like, what's the movie about? Nobody seems to really have any idea. So we called it two things because we can't make up our minds what exactly is happening.
Yeah, there was shockingly few scenes where they are actually birds of prey.
Like, the title makes... I mean, the movie doesn't make a ton of sense, which is not to say that it's badly... plotted and, like, you know, I sort of knew.
Although it is,
I knew essentially what was going on and what everybody wanted, which again, that's the bare minimum.
That is the bare minimum.
But
like, that's just above getting the crayons out of the box.
Otherwise, you can't work with them.
Exactly, you're just mashing the box onto the paper.
So, but yeah, they didn't seem to know what the hell they were gonna talk about in this movie. And I think the title is sort of like, it's kind of your first eyebrow raised to go, huh, well, which is it then? Like, can't be about two things. And it ended up being about pretty much nothing.
Yeah, I don't know what this movie was about. I guess Margot Robbie mugging for the camera the whole time.
Who, I have to say, is a absolute treasure. I think she's great.
What else has she been in besides that Tarantino movie?
She's been in which Tarantino movie?
The latest one.
Oh, the Hollywood film?
The Hollywood one.
Yeah.
She was in that.
She was in Wolf of Wall Street. She was in I, Tonya. She was, I can't stress this enough, fabulous in I, Tonya. Mm-hmm. And I watched a while ago on YouTube, they have this guy, I think it's for Wired magazine. Their channel has this guy show up and talk about accents in movies. He's like a dialect coach. And he said that in every time that he's done like a Margot Robbie, they'll show you like a short clip and he'll say what's going on here, if it's good, if it's bad. And he's always had nothing but like exceptional praise for her. And in I, Tonya, he says like, if you notice, her accent, her voice changes, because in the movie she's shown from when she's like, you know, 18, and then when she's like in her 40s. And her voice sounds different. And Margot Robbie's voice sounds different between the two scenes. So he's like, it's really impressive. And she is really very talented. She's also unbelievably attractive.
Yeah.
Like, it's sort of like distracting to go, my, you're just very good looking. My God, man.
But even in this, you think?
I do. Yeah. I was very drawn to her. Even like her and Ewan McGregor were kind of in their own movie, and they were playing it up for what it essentially was just like a B movie, yuck fest, with blood and gore. And I don't think that her acting chops were on display, but as far as her likability and, you know, the eye being drawn to her, she's still compelling, even though it's goofy and one dimensional.
Mm-hmm.
So, but what did you think overall?
I hated it, and I hated every second of it, and I'm actively angry that I had to watch it.
It's your idea, by the way.
I don't know what anyone was thinking. It was horrible. I felt like I was watching. It's like Booksmart. It's just like you stop and you look around the room. And you go, what the hell is everybody smoking? It was so tonally dissonant and annoying and cloy. Oh my God, it was so annoying. I just was like, I had to like take a shower afterwards. This is horrible. What is this? You know, and I found her. Your eye is drawn to her because she's sucking all the oxygen out of the room whenever she opens her mouth. So I found her irritating as well. You know,
the voice wears on you after a while.
Yeah. What is this accent she's doing,
Mr. J? Yeah.
It's not that though. Like, a high pitched voice is not an accent. So she also does this like awful fake New York thing.
Yeah.
And it's awfully grating because no one in New York talks like that with that high squeaky voice. And I think it's funny they praised her accent because she was in Suicide Squad, which is, this is sorry, ostensibly a sequel to. And in that film, her accent came and went. She didn't always do the New York accent, which is something I said when I was talking to Greg about it when we saw it. I was like, what is she doing it or not? So in this one, she just did it the entire time. And I just wanted to put a drill to my temple. I was just like, oh my God, she's, please shut up.
Do you know who did the voice of her in Batman the Animated Series?
Yeah.
Is it Arlene Sorkin? What else was she in that I would know her voice from?
Okay, I don't know.
She seems like she's married to Christopher Lloyd.
Yeah, well, she did it for years and then she stopped. She retired from it.
Yeah.
And then everybody since has basically just copied that voice. This is the first time she's had an accent.
I won't go so far as to say that there was an accent to Arlene Sorkin's version of it, but there was something sort of old-timey about it. Like, there's something about the character that's a little bit, I'm trying to think of what the best, not like antiquated, I'm thinking like old, but old-fashioned, I guess you could say. Just the way in which that, because the Joker is an old-fashioned character, and, you know, as a, you know, bad guy and a sidekick kind of compilation, they're a little bit old-fashioned because the whole thing has been around for, you know, 70 years. But so there's something kind of, you know, yeah, I guess old-fashioned is the best way to describe her relationship to Joker and the doting and the whole kind of a thing. And I guess there's ways in which you can take what Arlene Sorkin did, which I think was brilliant because everything about that show was brilliant. And when you ham it up, you get this. And if you can overdo this. And I still felt like, I mean, she was consistent with it, which I actually think is good. Like, if you're going to do this, don't just fade it in and out of it. Like, you want it to be, you know, one thought all the way through. Or, like, you know, one thing. But at the same time, you got to be mindful of, like, going overboard. I think she did go overboard with it a little
bit. Yeah, I think so.
So, Kaylee Cuoco is going to be playing her in an upcoming animated series. I'm not sure for whom. But
yeah, she's got one now. It's supposed to be good, where it's like her and Poison Ivy hanging out most of the time. It's basically the plot of this film, where it's like she's not with the Joker anymore, and it's a cartoon. It's on, I think, the DC Universe, which I don't know anybody who has it because I'm not paying for another streaming service.
They have their own streaming service?
They do.
That just shows DC movies?
Yeah, they do.
All like four of them?
Well, they have their own shows. They have a live-action show with the Teen Titans on it and stuff.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah, so this is supposed to be one of the better ones, the Harley Quinn show. But, like, Harley Quinn's a really hard character to do alone, which is what she spends most of this movie.
So let's talk about that, because there's
She's not alone in her own TV show. She spends most of her time with Poison Ivy. Poison Ivy always plays like the straight woman.
Right.
You know, and then Harley Quinn plays the lunatic. And they're like buddies, and sometimes they're hinted at that they're more than buddies. And in this movie, she doesn't have any of that. She doesn't have anybody. She just bumbles into the scenes and does her own thing.
I mean, from what I understand, the character wasn't meant to be that big of a deal. I don't, again, like, I always feel like I should do, like, my homework before I sit down and talk about this stuff, because, like, there's a lot to this character and its development and its fandom that I just don't know. But from what I can recall from reading things about it a while ago, it was just kind of supposed to be, like, a one-off thing. And, or, like, just kind of a minor thing. Because you basically, between her and Joker, they're the same person, essentially. Like, they, you know, she's an extension of him, as opposed to, say, her and Poison Ivy, where you have a straight man and a funny man. And I remember, I think it was like Steven Soderbergh or whoever directed Men in Black also directed Wild Wild West. And Men in Black was great, and Wild Wild West was terrible. And the guy said, like, I made, you know, a huge mistake, and I cast two funny men to play, you know, in Wild Wild West, whereas in Men in Black, it was a funny man and a straight man. It's just how comedy works like this. So with the Joker and Harley Quinn, you don't have a funny man and a straight man. You have two insane characters that just feed off of each other. And one just, and they almost cancel each other out because they're so bizarre. That said, young women found a lot to be attracted to with Harley Quinn, because she was a female character. She had, you know, she was a strong character, and that she wasn't afraid of anything. She would take on Batman. She was, you know, subservient to the Joker for sure. But some girls like that too. So you kind of get the best of both worlds. You get the crazy badass chick, and also, you know, having a relationship with a powerful person. So a lot of young women in the emo goth sort of vein latched onto this character and increased its popularity dramatically. But that doesn't solve the problem. There isn't much to her.
I mean, that's all new. So when they made her for the cartoon in the 90s, she was just a side character, just someone he could always have. Like, they got tired of animating a different goon every time. So they were like, well, what if he just had like a right-hand woman or something? And she always just does what he tells her to do. And they only did one episode towards the end when they showed you her backstory, where, like, you know, she was a promising PhD student. She wanted to work with the mentally ill. She met him. She fell in love, like, basically Stockholm Syndrome or whatever you call it. And that was it. She was always for him no matter what afterwards. And they did an episode where she was, like, I'm done with this guy. And you know what? Because he treats her like garbage. And she says, here's what I'll do. I'll capture Batman myself and bring it to him. And that'll make everything okay. And he gets so mad that she does that, that he gets rid of her again. And so, you know, she's in the hospital. He throws her out a window. She's in the hospital. That's it. I'll never talk to that guy again. And on her bedside is a bunch of flowers from the Joker. And she goes, oh, he's the best. You know? So, like, they always saw it as long as she's subservient to him in some way, that's the only thing about her. So all this new female empowerment stuff is new. And it's not fleshed out well in this film at all, because it takes like the first 40 minutes for her to admit to everyone that they're not even together anymore.
Yeah. So let's talk about the concept, because the movie starts off, you think, oh, this is going to start off with, you know, with a bang, and then it doesn't. And then you get a half an hour of explaining everything. And I kind of thought, like, oh, this is moving along, and she's running around. She goes to get the egg sandwich, which is a big deal.
And why is that a big deal? You can get that anywhere.
I know. I really don't understand. It's just a
bacon. I had one that day. It's just a bacon, egg, and cheese.
And I love a bacon, egg, and cheese. I really, really do. But geez, Louise. Actually, what's interesting is those eggs are actually duck eggs. Because the guy who makes the Binging with Babish channel on YouTube made that. And Margot Robbie is allergic to chicken eggs, so they had to use duck eggs for her. Fun fact.
Why is that interesting?
It's right. Not. Oh, not even remotely. But the concept I thought was pretty good. So, like, that, I don't know. Was I missing a backstory where you see the breakup or something like that? Or was that in Suicide Squad? I don't.
No. In Suicide Squad, they get together. Okay. So this was all just sort of fabricated for this film. Whatever they can do to separate it from Suicide Squad, because that movie was awful too. So they were kind of less like, just forget about that. Now she's on her own. I mean.
Oh, really? So there was no lead up to this?
No. Oh. The lead up is that Jared Leto's Joker was terrible. So, like, worse than her. So they were like, how can we dump him as fast as possible and just focus on her, because she's a movie star?
Yes.
So they basically, like, all right. So, and you're right. I think it was interesting too. You know, now that she's alone and not together with him, everybody who would previously hurt her can now do that. But at the same time, you can't make a movie out of it. It's not enough.
Is there any way that you could, like, is there a way that you could, is there a story to be told with somebody who has to, like, you know, she didn't realize how dependent she was on him? Because that's the thing, is that she's aware, like, oh my God, they all want to kill me, and here are the reasons why. Like, and she has all these skills that she can then use to, but, like, there, I think there's a story in there somewhere, but the way that they set it up, that she's basically a super person, but, you know, without any cause, it's just lucky. Like, I don't know, but, like.
Well, that's why they always pair her with somebody.
Yeah.
You know, like, she does a good job with Poison Ivy, because Poison Ivy has powers that she doesn't have.
Yeah.
And can think things straight and tell her when she needs to knock it off and fix things for her when she screws them up.
Because they don't say that she's incompetent. They just don't lean into the skills that she has. Like, which, you know, they're, you know, she's got a PhD in psychology. Okay, fine. So how do you leverage that to tell the story of how she can, like, she has to end up different at the end. Independence is not different. It's just independent. So I think that's their biggest flaw in the film, is that a character's independence from, you know, a previous paramour or abusive person is change, but it's not development or growth. It's just the elimination of one character from a scenario.
I guess. I mean, I don't even know if that's what they were going for.
That's what they did, was they said that, like, I've kicked this person out of my life, and I have to be happy about that. And she struggles with it, I guess, for the first half an hour of the film. Then she blows up Acme Chemicals, which somehow sends a message to everybody that they're through. There's backstory that I guess I'm missing. And then she has to stand up on her own and defend herself against all the bad guys that want to kill her. Okay, fine, but like, you didn't learn nothing.
Well, she didn't learn anything because she doesn't have to learn anything because she can do that already. Yeah. Like, the idea is that, like, without the Joker, I'm less. You know, I don't have any money and I can't fend off waves of goons who would try to hurt me. But she does all that and she has money. There's no problem in this film. Everywhere she goes, she just whacks people in the face. I was like, what exactly are her superpowers? Because she seems to have some, you know. Where is she getting ammo and guns and giant mallets? And she can do backflips and everything. It was boring. Everyone's like, oh, the action was great and gory. I'm like, this is boring as hell.
Terrible. The action was unbelievably badly executed.
Like, she had no problem with anything.
It was
annoying as hell to watch them run in with guns, and then they would just try to beat her up. I was like, you have a gun. Shoot your gun at her. Like, it was stupid. I was like, oh, man. So what's the point of watching her try to be an independent person when she already is one?
Yeah, no, she really has nothing to develop. I think my note here says, I mean, I know what they're going for, but I've seen more realistic fight scenes in 70s kung fu movies.
Yeah. I mean, that scene in Dumb and Dumber where he punches his hand through the guy's chest and rips his heart out. It's like that.
Oh, but you could really do that. You know, you can't throw a cell phone at someone's head and have them just collapse and be knocked out.
And do a backflip.
I'm going to backflip this phone into your head. Like, and if it was all that kind of goofy shit and the plot aside, I kind of would have been okay with it. It would have been dumb. And, you know, sort of uninteresting. But at the same time, it would have been like, all right, well, this is what they're doing. It's not my cup of tea, but the kids like it. But there were some significant tonal issues that the film has. In particular, like, the murdering of children, for one. And the bizarre scene when they're dancing in the club and Ewan McGregor tells that lady to get up on the table and...
Oh, my God. What movie was that scene from?
I don't know. Was that just like an outtake where they just forgot that, no, this isn't working, Ewan. We're going to do something else. Like,
yeah, I don't know what Ewan McGregor was doing in this movie.
I mean, he was hilarious.
Was he, though?
Yeah, because, like, I had to find something funny, and he's so talented. It's just like, why are you making this movie? But
here's why it's tough, because I think of Gene Hackman in Superman. Admittedly, my least favorite Lex Luthor, but he was consistent.
Yes.
Like, his goofiness always came out at certain points that you expected them to. Whereas this guy, I'm not sure why he would suddenly act like an insane person and cut people's faces off versus being like the wacky playboy who likes to keep gloves on because he's like a germaphobe. Like, if you don't play that consistently, I'm not sure when to laugh. And neither do the people in the scenes he's acting in know. Yeah. So, like, when he starts screaming at them, I'm 100% convinced they had no idea what he was saying because they were like, is he serious? Should I really get on this table and take my clothes off and dance and hold a knife to my throat? Because I'm sitting there like, when's the gag coming? Where's the punchline, buddy?
Yeah.
And it didn't come. And then the scene just ended. And I'm like, what the hell was that?
Yeah. So
did you shoot everybody after that or what?
Gene Hackman is kind of a good example of the way to thread this needle because he was both goofy as all get out, but actively scary at the same time. Like, you really felt that he was, you know, a true sociopath and would kill whomever just to, you know, accomplish his evil plans.
Still the bad guy.
Yeah, he's still the bad guy, you know, yelling at Otis and this whole thing and living under under Grand Central Station. And yeah, no, I mean, it was a dumb fucking idea for that character. But it's Gene Hackman. Like,
well, Ewan McGregor's a good actor, too. It just, I don't know what he was trying to do. His character wasn't consistent.
Nothing.
Like, he veered from
really
being goofy to wildly inappropriate rated R movie stuff. And it made it hard to know what he was doing and why he would make decisions he made. You know, like, I was shocked they put a scene where he kidnapped Harley Quinn and then she, like, said she could get that dumb diamond thing he needed. Because, like, even in the dumbest of films, there's no way a character would let her go. You know, like, he lets her go and then he says, tell everybody else about the diamond and we'll see which one gets it. And if she should happen and get killed in the meantime, good, fun sport for us. Okay, that's crazy villainous comic book stuff. But he would veer so wildly from psychopath to that kind of thing that you'd be like, you know, like, why is he doing that? I guess the plot needs to keep going because we're only halfway through the film. Like, it just feels forced and stupid.
Yeah, and the tonal shifts also, they're everywhere. They're not just in the acting or the writing. They're in, like, the set design. Like,
oh, I know.
They really couldn't. They really had no idea what they wanted to do. Because for the first, like, I don't know, half the movie, they're in New York City. It's obvious where they are. They're in New York. I've been there before. It's New York. Or parts of L.A. or whatever. But it's a regular American city. And then by the end of the movie, they're in some sort of, like, ultra-gothic hellscape with abandoned amusement parks, where, by the way, she had a hideout?
Yeah, that's the abandoned amusement park where the Joker used to hide out there. That's where all his weapons were.
But, like, they didn't... She was living above a Chinese food restaurant. Why did she...
I think it was Joker's place.
I guess. I don't know. That was unclear.
Yeah, and then they go down to those creepy docks. And at the end, they're in South Beach eating margaritas and tacos again. And I'm just like, wait, where are we now? This is the same city?
Yeah, no, it's
so clean and bright.
So this constant confusion about where they were supposed to, like, what kind of a movie they were trying to make was just permeated literally every level of production.
Yeah. And, like, the music, like, they play, like, goofy pop songs during some fights, and some fights would be, like, dramatic, heavy orchestras. I'm just like, am I supposed to think that they might get killed here? Because I know they won't. But in the other one with the girl power stuff, I definitely know they're not going to get killed, so...
Like, I generally have come to really hate the use of pop music in movies without a good reason. Like, so one of the films that I like a lot is called The Martian. It's the one with Matt Damon where he's trapped on Mars. And that movie uses pop music in a really interesting way in that he's trapped on Mars and his crewmates, they all have to leave in a hurry. And so they get on the spaceship and fly away, and they leave him behind. And the only music available to him is that of one of the characters who left, and she's a huge disco fan. So they find disco songs and songs from the 70s to permeate the soundtrack. And I think for the most part, they're like, I don't know what you call it when, like, the music comes from the story. Like, it's like the guy hits play on a CD player, and then that becomes the soundtrack to the scene.
Yeah, Guardians of the Galaxy did this really well.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, that kind of use of music. I tend to really, really hate when they just shoehorn in, this song is popular, and the record label that, you know, that signed this guy is also owns this movie studio. Therefore, we have to, you know.
Get it in there somehow.
So,
yeah, I don't know why they do that.
To make money. They do it to make money.
Yeah. I think it's interesting how before these things come out, because this one was, you know, primarily women, directed by a woman, written by a woman. You know, it's supposed to be this meditation on feminist power and all that stuff. And then when the movie comes out and it's terrible, you don't hear that anymore.
No, I'm not sure what lame excuse they came up with this time for why the movie didn't do well. It's pretty obvious to me. But the the birds of prey are the other women. They're not her.
I don't think they're her. In the comics, she's not really in it. Very rarely she's in it. The birds of prey are usually the Crossbow Girl, Black Canary, and Batwoman.
Really?
Yeah.
Why haven't we got a Batwoman movie yet?
I don't know. I would have picked that over this if you have to do a character.
Now, there were a couple of Batwomen girls. There was Barbara Gordon was one. And then who was the other one? There was another one.
There's Katie Kane. Okay. She's a different Batwoman. Because in the original comics, Barbara Gordon gets shot and paralyzed.
She becomes Oracle, right?
Yeah, she becomes like the computer kind.
Interesting. Yeah. So, anything that you liked about the movie? He says, looking at the time code and going, it's only been a half an hour, and we've talked about everything we don't like about it.
Well, if I could just jump in here, I mean, not really. I liked Mary Elizabeth Winstead. She was in a different movie.
Which one was she in?
She was the Crossbow Girl.
Oh, she was from Fargo.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Sure. Yeah.
I don't know why they put them all in there. They barely have anything to do with each other. Like, they don't come together till the last 15, 20 minutes.
Yeah. No, it,
you know?
I guess they just didn't have enough story to tell. It's just, there's nothing to say. It's just so terrible. You know, like, I was actively engaged while watching it going, I wonder if they're going to make it out of this ridiculous plot in the way that I think they are. Like, it just, my attention was held enough that I could sit there and go, like, I'm watching the film. I'm not looking at my phone. I'm not, you know, confused. It's a little goofy. I'm laughing at how dumb it is. But, like, you know, I can really tone out of a film I'm not paying attention to and just, you know, pull out Candy Crush on my phone and go bananas. But so the simplicity of the plot, despite its, you know, its various characters kind of poking their heads in and out, made it a watchable experience. But
I mean, the plot was simple. I think it because it was so simple that they had all the dumb flashbacks and the jumping around. I think it was trying too hard to, like, imitate Deadpool with all the, like, the voiceover and everything.
Yeah,
that doesn't really work with most things. Deadpool's an exception to that.
Yeah, it really, because its fourth wall breaking is sort of unique in a way, you know, and I guess this is unique. You didn't see her doing that in the last movie she was in, so this is a different kind of movie than Suicide Squad.
Yeah, but I mean, half of that stuff for Deadpool is just to make jokes. Like, it's commentary of how ridiculous everything is. So you're right. Like, he talks about what's going on in the plot, but a lot of time he'll also just look at the camera and wink and make jokes about, like, we didn't have the budget for this, so there's no scene for that. And let's just jump to the next part. And, you know, like, oh, these outfits only look good on Ryan Reynolds. Ha ha ha. Whereas in this one, it's everything she's thinking and feeling is just being blurted out. Because when she acts it, she always does it with this manic grin on her face. So when she tells you that she's upset and she's doing this wide smile like she's at the dentist, it's like you just couldn't get that across another way, huh? You just had to blurt it out. That's flaccid, sloppy writing.
I was just going to say, and God help you if you use voiceover in your work.
Yeah, like she has to explain everything. It got so tiresome.
Yeah, that was, so it's the ultimate, you know, telling it, don't not showing it type of movie. Like, the, yeah, everything she said had, you know, or everything she did was accompanied by some kind of an explanation for what it was.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, that made it very tedious. Because you're right, there was no way to tell, based on what she was doing, what she was thinking. Because she just ran around and smiled and mugged for the camera and hit people with, you know, big shiny mallets.
Yeah, well, that's generally the problem you have when you have an insane character. You know, just because she could spew a couple of lines about being a PhD and being like, well, he's a class of narcissist, you know, obsessive compulsive. I'm like, that doesn't make you smart. If anything, it just makes you more annoying. I can see why everybody's here trying to kill you.
Yeah.
Yeah. They did their best to get away from Suicide Squad, which is hard because that movie stunk. But they put a lot of eggs into a basket with that one. You know, they had Jared Leto's character was supposed to be new. All these other villains, Will Smith, Ben Affleck, all those people, you know, they were supposed to branch out from there. But it's like the same thing with Man of Steel and everything. If you pick Zack Snyder and you hope to rest all your bones of something on that, you're going to screw yourself because it's terrible.
Was Batman in Suicide Squad?
Yeah, for like 2 seconds. He only had a cameo.
What does he do?
He captures Harley Quinn. So the Joker and Harley Quinn are like doing a getaway on a car. And Batman like jumps on the car. And the Joker drives it over like a bridge on purpose. Hits the ejector seat. Harley Quinn goes down with the car. So Batman rescues her and the Joker gets away. And that's how she's in the movie, and the Joker like pops up here and there, but he's like trying to get her back the whole film. Hmm. Which is weird because at the end of the film he breaks into the prison to get her back out. So in this movie they're suddenly broken up. It's like, all right, sure. Because we really didn't like Jared Leto.
Yeah.
Which, well, I didn't either. He was awful.
I mean, I think a lot of that too was the makeup. Like the makeup design for the character, which is not chosen by the actor. I mean, they might have some input, I guess. I don't know. But like that decision is made by a lot of other people. And it's going to inform the character tremendously. So you bring him into a room and you say, okay, this is what we're thinking of, you know, for this character. Or, you know, it could be even more collaborative than that. But it's not driven solely by the actor. So you say, okay, this is what we're thinking, Jared, what do you think? And oh, it's great or whatever. And like you end up with this, like I just saw a picture of him. I'm like, what the fuck is that? And like,
yeah, he had like the tattoos on his face and the grill on the teeth. And
yeah, it just,
yeah. And she had it too. She had tattoos on her face and everything.
Yeah.
That they show you her like doing them on her leg, like filling them in and replacing them. Cause like covering them up because, you know, they reminded her of the Joker, so she's changing them. Like, just start again, you know? Like, it wasn't a good look.
No. It there was just no depth to the character whatsoever. And it's not easy. It's these characters are not deep. Batman is the only one, you know? And, like, the best version of the Joker, who was the best villain in the whole thing, was so one-dimensional as to basically just be a plot device. But it was the execution of that was so compelling. And the way that he looked, the way that he sounded, and the writing of it. But the character was as flat as a pancake. There's nothing to him. So, I mean, it's a problem with DC. I mean, Marvel isn't much less shallow than this, but it's a little bit. You know, like,
well, it's hard to do villains. I don't know why they always want to do these villain movies. Like when they were trying to plan the Sinister Six film for all the Spider-Man characters, I just looked around like, why would anyone do that? Like, they're not very deep and interesting. They're one note Johnny characters. I don't see where the depth comes from. Not to mention that they're usually bad. Like, it was hard to root for anybody in this film because they were bad people.
mean, the cop, you kind of rooted for Rosie Perez.
Yeah, and, you know, and the tone hurt for that because it was so cartoonishly, everybody was so cartoonishly against her that it got dumb. And you're like, really? Like, she can't catch any breaks. Like, it was goofy, stupid, so.
Yeah, there's one thing to show, like, corruption in a police force. There's one thing to just show buffoonery.
Right, like, they're totally incompetent, donut-munching morons, except for her. And, like, that she jokes like she talks like she's a cop from an 80s TV show. But that's not funny.
if you're doing it.
Like, if you're just doing it. Like, oh, she talks like a cop from a TV show. Uh-huh.
Nice observation. Way to
then
go.
Then what? Yeah, you know? And even the Black Canary, like, she's supposed to be a good guy. In the comics, she's a good person all the time. She goes out with the Green Arrow.
Well, aren't they all good people except for Harley Quinn?
Yeah, you know, the Crossbow Girl's kind of bad sometimes. Because her idea is that she murders people, and that's a big no-no. So, you know, but none of them are particularly likable. I mean, she becomes like the henchman of the main villain. And I didn't think they were going to show her doing that sonic boom thing she does, where she can scream real loud and knock people over. I was like, man, that really would have come in handy 45 minutes ago.
Really at any other point in this film.
Yeah. Let's just beat the goons up by hand first.
Yeah. I don't understand, you know. Is there a way to tell a villain story like a superhero story? Or is that just silly? Like Joker, the movie Joker, we talked about it a few months ago, is sort of the only one about a villain becoming a villain. And like, you know,
and I don't count that one because he's so mentally ill.
Yeah, no, it's not even in the same genre. It's a different, that movie very much stands on its own. You know, it just takes the characters and the concepts and does them totally totally differently. But I think that's the only way you can do it, though. That, you know, you can sort of tell that story where it's, you know, a reasonably well executed tale. It's not going to sell action figures, you know. Like, that's really what they wanted to do here, was to sell, you know, Harley Quinn action figures. And, you know, the blood and gore and the hard R. Everything but nudity, for Christ's sakes.
Yeah, the chopping of faces.
Oh, God. But like,
I was like, really?
I mean, and like a child, too. And like, they don't like shy from that. Like, they make a point of going to the well, you know, I guess you've seen enough. We've murdered both your parents in front of you. Oh, what is that, a snot bubble? Never mind.
Yeah, that's the kind of weirdo stuff. I was like, huh?
I'm like, no, that's, you know, it's just so terrible a thing to do to anybody. But then to children, it's just bizarre.
Oh, and please. She was 18.
Oh, yeah. No, piece of cake. But like.
Yeah. I think if you want to show this story, if you want to show a villain being a villain and make them the protagonist, then they got to have the same typical journey where they start at the bottom and they learn something about themselves and they make a change. The problem is the change they make is the bad one, where their morals go out the window. I have no, you know, most heroes are like, they learn to accept the responsibility, like Spider-Man or something.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to show the villain, then you have to show the villain taking responsibility by doing bad things. Like, well, I'm just going to rob people then because I need it for whatever it is I'm going to do.
Can you think of a story or a movie or TV show where that's been executed well?
Not off the top of my head. I'm sure I could. Not this second. But I can't see how it wouldn't. I'm sure it could be done.
Omar from The Wire is probably about as close as you come to that. and you haven't seen The Wire, which is a tragedy.
You'd think I would now, right?
You literally have no excuses left. You just don't. You just please just watch The Wire. I won't divulge too much about him because you should see the show. But he's a guy that robs drug dealers. So he's a bad guy in that he, you know, robs and kills, but he has a relationship with the police that's not quite a vigilante, but not quite not a vigilante. That's about as close as you get to it. I mean, Anakin Skywalker sort of does this. Like, you know, he's the hero that turns into a villain kind of a thing. But those films were just so bad, it was hard. It's hard to see how that would be. You know, it's certainly not an example of this done well. But that's as close as you get, I think. You know, and like even with Suicide Squad, Will Smith's character, right? He was a bad guy, but like not really, because he's Will Smith and he can't ever play a bad guy. It's like his thing,
right? And like he's the bad guy with like the heart of gold in the end, but he's still willing to shoot people in the face. You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah,
or just look at Breaking Bad. You know, he's the good guy who makes the wrong choices throughout everything, until at the end when, I mean, even when he's murdering and liquefying people in bathtubs, a lot of people defended everything he did, which they shouldn't have, because at the end you're not supposed to be on his side, but you're still sort of rooting for him. You can understand why he did the things he did.
Yeah.
Which is why that scene where he finally talks to his wife at the end and he says, "I was good at what I did and I enjoyed it." I don't like that scene because it just spells that out for you. If you were paying any bit of attention, you would have noticed he was good at it and enjoyed doing it.
Yeah.
So
it's a little on the nose, but at the same time, Skyler, I think, needed to hear that more than the audience. So for her, it was really a circle for that character, because she says, "Don't tell me you did it for me, or I'm going to kill you." Mm-hmm. You know,
or The Godfather. Where Michael's the good guy and he makes villainous choices and still comes out on top.
Yeah, and I think the thing that makes those stories in general easier to tell, or like it's just less of a leap, is that they don't live in a binary world. Like The Godfather, you know, that's supposed to be regular New York.
Well, it's harder in a superhero movie because you're right. It's there's good and there's bad.
Yeah. In Breaking Bad, there's just shades of gray.
Right, but people don't look at it in the stories. People in the stories don't look at it as shades of gray. So when you live in a comic book world and you have paragons of excellence and virtue, you know, you can't help but look at it that way. You know, but I don't walk out my door in the real world and go, "I wonder what shades of gray I might run into today." You know, it's just people are who they are. If you live in a world with Superman and Batman, then you know you're on one side of that line. So it's definitely harder for these villainous characters to be made the main story. And teaming them up doesn't help if they're all going to be bad.
I mean, the only way you do it well is if you make it a comedy. And that's not what this is. A, because it's not funny, and B, because it's also, you know, so unbelievably, you know, awkward at times. Not even the violence is bad enough, but the, you know, the table dancing scene and the face peeling scenes, and like, you know, there's ways to do this where it's funny. You know, you think of Tarantino and you know, the ear in Reservoir Dogs. That's a funny scene. You know, wonderful use of music, and he's talking to the ear. I mean, it's great, but it's also horrifying at the same time. But you don't see it. You know, they don't show you peeling that guy's face off, but you see him holding his face as he's walking across the screen. Like,
yeah, and stupid me, I had to look at the, like, you know, the dummy as he's walking away. I'm like, did they really cut that guy's face? Oh God, they did. You just see like you know, flesh.
It's just disgusting.
So.
Yeah, no, it's just...
Yeah, well, I was just stunned by all the tonal problems and the plot problems, and the problems with my hands. And so it was a rough one. I can see why it didn't do well.
It did very poorly.
I mean, it wasn't February.
Yeah, it's not a good time. But like, it had a budget of like 80 something. It made 155. It would need to, you know, double that to break even. So yeah, this was a huge loss. You know, not for Margot Robbie, who produced it. It probably made a ton of money on the back end.
Yeah. But, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what the DC guys are still doing. They're trying to get away from the Zack Snyder stuff. It's not easy.
No, they dug a deep fucking hole with that. They really did. And yeah, that's hard to get out of.
Yeah, so, should have sent a guy down there to double check what they were doing.
Looks great, Zach.
Yeah. Ooh, stylish. You know, I like that.
Yeah.
Well, so, that's it. That's all I know.
It's not good. Don't.
I hate it. There you go.
Don't bother to see this. If you guys, though, out there in Radio Land have any thoughts about Birds of Prey, or whatever the hell it's called, you can tell us about it on Twitter and Instagram at @3DrinksInPod. Make sure that you go to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen and subscribe to the podcast. Tell your friends, leave reviews. If you want, we can read them on the air, you know, to encourage you to do that. Because, you know, it would be funny. I mean, leave good reviews. They can be funny, too. Also, we have the Facebook page, and you can email us at 3drinksinpodcast@gmail.com. Anything else?
No.
That's everything. Fine. Yes. All right. As always, please wash your hands, drink responsibly, and we will talk to you next time.
Yep. Take care.
Bye.